When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome back to the Dirt Show. Before we get to the gag order, which is just outrageous, you'll hear why in a minute. Just a couple of things to bring us up to date. My new book is out, number 54, War on Woke: Why the New McCarthyism is More Dangerous Than the Old, and you'll see why it's much more dangerous, because it's being brought to us mostly by young people who are our future. And at some point, we'll have an opportunity to talk about it. But in the meantime, you can get it on Amazon. Second, a new development politically. Everybody thought that Florida, where I spent a lot of time, is not a contested state, that it's going to go Republican. But the Biden team has now said they're going to contest Florida because of the abortion issue. The Florida Supreme Court upheld a ban on abortion after 5 weeks, which is much, much too short. There are some women who don't even know they're pregnant within 5 weeks. And it's going to be on the Florida ballot to make it viability, which is more than 20 weeks. And that's a big, a big issue. And most people in America favor more permissive abortion up to about viability and up to about 20 weeks. So the Democrats and the Biden campaign believes that Florida is now in contention because there will be a referendum on the ballot that many people will vote on the Biden side against the Trump side. Well, if that's true, let me caution the Biden campaign: you're not going to win Florida if you don't support Israel. If you think that you're going to lose Michigan because of 200,000 or so Muslims or Arabs, that's nothing compared to what's going to happen in Florida, where there are so many pro-Israel voters, so many Jewish voters, indeed, so many Israeli voters. South Florida has many, many dual citizens or Israeli and American. And they're not going to vote for President Biden if they don't think that President Biden is being supportive of Israel's right to defend itself, particularly if they think that he's changed his views for political reasons. So, if President Biden is taking politics into account, which he shouldn't do in making foreign policy decisions like this, but if he is, you have to factor in Florida. And, many of us who are Jewish and who are pro-Israel, you can't take our vote for granted. Yes, I voted Democrat for every president since John Kennedy, but you can't take my vote for granted in this case. I care deeply about America's relationship with Israel. I think it's good for America. It's good for Israel. So, and certainly you can't take for granted the many, many, many thousands of pro-Israel voters, Jewish and Christian, who care deeply about the relationship. So even if you're doing just a political calculus, hey, take that into account too. All right, let's turn to the gag order. Again, it's so obviously improper in this case. First of all, before we even get to the substance of the gag order, has anybody ever heard of a case where a judge makes a decision favorable to his own daughter, saying, "I'm ruling in my daughter's favor"? The Trump people say Trump should be allowed to complain about Lauren Marchand, the daughter. And the prosecutors say, no, they shouldn't be able to mention Lauren Marchand, the daughter. So the judge has to decide whether he's going to rule in favor of his daughter or against his daughter. Has there ever been a clearer conflict of interest? What if there were a lawsuit and somebody was suing Marchand's daughter for $1 million? Would he be able to sit on that case? Of course not. So how can he sit on a case and decide a case involving whether a gag order should cover his own daughter. And now let's turn to the merits. Who is this woman, Lauren Marchand? She's an adult. She's a wealthy woman. She makes a lot of money campaigning, helping to campaign for the likes of Adam Schiff. Now, remember who Adam Schiff is. He's running for the Senate in California. But he was the Democrat in charge of impeaching Donald Trump. And she's his campaign person. Her firm campaigns for him, raises money for him. What an obvious conflict of interest. As I've mentioned before, when judges have to make financial disclosures, obviously they have to make financial disclosures that cover any benefits to a daughter, to a son, to a wife. And if you need any proof of that, just ask the Democrats what they're saying about Clarence Thomas and his wife. They're seeking Clarence Thomas's recusal because his wife is involved in campaigning for Donald Trump. Well, what's the difference? There may be differences in degree, but when you're dealing with recusal, obviously, even the appearance, going back to Fawny Willis, even the appearance of a conflict should be enough to get you disqualified. But putting aside the issue of disqualification, obviously, Trump has the constitutional right as a man running for president to campaign on this issue, to campaign and say that the Lauren Marchand, who is trying very hard to get him defeated for office, has an influence on her father, that she and her father may very well have discussed the case. Look, I have a daughter. I'll do anything for her. If I were a judge and I knew that a certain way of deciding a case would help my daughter, unconsciously or consciously, of course I'd be influenced by that. That's what a father does. That's why fathers can't sit on cases involving, except in New York and except if it's Donald Trump. Then the father, A, can sit on the case, decide the case in favor of the daughter, preclude the defendant from saying not nice things about the daughter, and sit on the case, even though you're a judge and it's a jury trial, but judges have enormous influence on the outcome of a case, sit on a case whose outcome may very well determine whether his daughter keeps the job. You know, if Trump loses the election, she gets rich. If Trump wins the election, she may get unemployed. Who knows? You know, he's Biden's a pretty important, the Democrats are pretty important clients here. And Adam Schiff, also a pretty important client. The appearance of justice is so important in a case when you're prosecuting on an extremely weak substantive case, when you're prosecuting the man running for president against the incumbent president. You have to be above reproach. And every one of these cases is conflicted. Every single one of them. The New York City case involving hush money paid to a stripper or a porn star, whatever she is, denied by Trump. And then a requirement that he have to disclose the fact that he paid hush money. Who would ever pay hush money if it had to be disclosed? Alexander Hamilton paid hush money. He didn't disclose it until he decided to disclose it after the Jefferson calendar people disclosed it. But he was not required to disclose it. Can anybody name a single case in the history of Western civilization where a person was prosecuted for not disclosing the payment of hush money? I can't think of any such case. But, you know, my former student on CNN, Norm Eisen, great guy, he says this is a strong, solid case. If it was such a strong, solid case, why didn't the feds bring it? It involved interference in a federal election. The state instead cobbled together a federal case which wasn't brought with a state case which couldn't be brought unless there's a federal case, and created out of whole cloth a crime out of a non-crime. And so it's a weak case. It's a conflict of interest for the judge to be deciding whether the gag order covers his daughter. He was smart enough to keep his daughter out of it the first time around, but he immediately succumbed when the Get Trump prosecutor said, well, no, you have to cover your daughter too, and all relatives and all everybody else. No, this is a very weak case. And a man running for president has the constitutional right under the First Amendment to campaign against this case, to campaign against the judge, to campaign against the judge's daughter, to campaign against the system and the district attorney. Now, he's entitled to campaign against the district attorney. He's entitled to campaign against the judge, but he should also be entitled to campaign against the judge's daughter. We're not talking about a three-year-old infant or somebody who had nothing to do with politics. No, that would be a different matter. We're talking about a woman who is deeply involved in the politics of Democrat versus Republican electoral fortunes. And so she is a perfectly appropriate target. You know, judges have to have thick skins and their relative have to have thick skins. Look, I know my relatives have been attacked over and over again for things that I've done and said. You got to deal with it. You just got to deal with it. You can't have prior restraint. I mean, prior restraint is such an anathema to the Constitution. I mean, post-restraint is bad enough when you prosecute people for speech that they've made after they've made the speech. But prior restraint, the Pentagon Papers case, other cases like that, framers of the First Amendment would never permit prior restraint in a political context. And that's what this is. This is a political context. Let no one be fooled by thinking that the prosecutions in these cases are not political. If Donald Trump weren't running for president, believe me, he'd not have been prosecuted on this made-up charge in New York. He wouldn't be held to be fined in the made-up civil case in New York. I don't think he'd have been tried for the Georgia case, the DC case, and almost certainly not the Palm Beach County or Florida case. So these are political cases. These are cases designed to influence the election. Jack Smith admits as much. He says that he wants this case to be tried. He wants there to be a conviction in time for the election so that the public will be able to know that they are voting for or against a convicted felon. So, you know, we're seeing so much distortion of the Constitution. We're seeing so much weaponization of our legal system. It's just appalling. And I would hope that the Trump people would proceed to appeal the gag order, proceed to appeal the recusal motion. You know, people say all Trump wants to do is delay the trial. No, the shoe is on the other foot. What the prosecutors want to do is speed up the trial. And inevitably, the Trump people are trying to level the playing field by saying, if you're trying to speed it up, we're going to try to slow it down. But don't put the blame and onus only on one side. And so, you know, what we have here is a compromise of the First Amendment. Where's the ACLU? I guarantee you, if this were a case where a gag order was placed on a Democrat running for president, you'd hear from the ACLU immediately. But we haven't heard a word from the ACLU. The ACLU has been involved over many years in challenging gag orders, but not in this case, because if it's Trump, it's different. No, it's not. If it's Trump, it's the same. That's why I wrote my book, Get Trump, because you can't have one law for Trump and one law for other people. And what we see is a clear, clear double standard. And I'm going to fight the double standard. And there are people who are saying, oh, well, you know, you're a Trump supporter. No, I'm not. I have to tell you, I'm at this point, I haven't made up my mind who I'm going to vote for in this election. I haven't precluded anything. I'm going to wait and see what happens. I'm very disturbed at how the Democrats, many of them, some 18 senators on the Democratic side, and many, many Republicans. Recently, the two of the heads of the Republican Party endorsed a complete anti-Semite racist candidate in New York, a man who was called What Israel is Doing a Genocide. And they just endorsed him to run for re-election in the North Bronx area. And so I'm withholding my endorsements, my votes. I'm going to wait and see. I'm going to wait and see what happens. I'm also going to wait and see what happens, obviously, on some of these legal issues that are affecting Trump's ability to run for election. It's a worrying time. It's a worrying time for America. And I know a lot of you are equally concerned, because I'm getting more and more letters and more people watching the podcast, because whatever side you are on politically, you can't be happy about the direction in which this country is going. I focus mostly on the legal direction in which this country is going. I worry about the political direction in which this country is going. I worry about the extremism on both sides. I worry about our inability to talk to each other. I bemoan the loss of Joe Lieberman, as I said yesterday, because he was a guy who could talk to both sides. He was a guy who could get the vice presidential nomination for the Democrats and also be considered for the Democratic, for the vice presidential nomination for the Republicans. I'm going to miss Joe, and I got a lot of letters commending me on my comments about Joe and wishing his family well and bemoaning the loss of such a great American. In fact, I'm going to start with a letter, a kind of nasty letter about Joe, because I want to have a chance to answer it. Here's the first letter. Joe Lieberman was a Jew first and an American second. You know, that is such a basic anti-Semitic lie. Joe Lieberman was a great patriot, and he was an American first. And let me prove it to you. Some of you may remember the case of Jonathan Pollard. Jonathan Pollard was, a naval intelligence officer who spied for Israel. He gave them information which he believed they were entitled to under agreements, but he was wrong to do it. I was one of his lawyers, yes. And Joe Lieberman was a strong proponent of putting Jonathan Pollard in jail and keeping him there. In fact, Joe and I had our only argument ever over Pollard. So Joe put his Americanism way, way before his Judaism. He was a Jew, somebody who was very pro-Israel, who was spying for Israel. He now lives in Israel. And he was sentenced to 30 years in prison, an extraordinary sentence. People who spy for the Soviets and the Russians and the Chinese don't get 30 years. He got 30 years. I opposed the 30 years. I thought it was too harsh. Joe didn't. Joe was part of the campaign to keep him in prison till the very end, when it became clear that they were pushing too far and he was sick and all that. But Joe was very, very much in favor of prosecuting this Jewish Zionist who had betrayed the United States. And it proved beyond any doubt that he was an American first. He was an American patriot. You know, almost everybody in America has dual loyalties. If you're an American and you're a religious Catholic, you have loyalty to the Vatican too. But you put your Americanism first, as John Kennedy made it clear. You know, if you're a Muslim American, you have dual loyalties. If you're a Black American, if you're a female American, you have multiple loyalties. You put your feminism at a very high level. If you're gay, you put your sexual orientation. What difference is it if you're Jewish? America is a mosaic. George Washington wrote to the congregation of Newport. He didn't say give up your Judaism. He didn't say you have to pick being American over being Jewish. He said you can be a great American and be a great Jew, and that's the case. I hope I satisfy that criteria too. I love America. I'm a loyal, patriotic American, but I support Israel, and I think that American support for Israel is good for America. Is that because of my Zionism or my Jewishness? Well, you know, get a psychiatrist to answer that question. I can only tell you that I'm an American first. As you may know, I was offered the job by the Israeli government to be Israel's representative at the UN, and I turned it down because I was an American first. I didn't want to be in a position where there could ever be a conflict between my Americanism and my Zionism. And so I turned down that job, and I think Joe would have done the same thing. So I think it's a libel. I think it's an anti-Semitic libel to say that Joe Lieberman was a Jew first and an American second. That's one of the oldest defamations against Jewish people everywhere in the world. And it's just not true. Okay. Professor, the student council at Harvard Law School passed a resolution calling on the university to divest from Israel and everything connected with it. They did it after voting to amend the bylaws so that they could vote by secret ballot. They were obviously too cowardly to put their names to the hateful resolution. Hopefully the names of those voting for this will become public. If it does, I will publish them. I think people have to be held accountable for their vote. Shame, shame on the Harvard Law School students who voted to boycott Israel and who didn't have the courage to put their names on the resolution because they were afraid that if they did, maybe a law firm might not hire them. Well, if I were a lawyer, I wouldn't hire somebody who called for a boycott only of Israel, not of Iran, not of Syria, not of China, not of Cuba, just Israel. There is more than a degree of anti-Semitism there. So yeah, if any of you know the names of people who voted for this resolution at Harvard Law School, send me their names. I will try to confirm their names. I will call them, give them an opportunity to defend themselves. But in the end, after due process, I will publish their names. I think we have a right to know. I think clients have a right to know that you're being represented by bigots. Just like if you were a member of the Ku Klux Klan, you can't hide that if you're trying to get a job in a law firm. And if you're taking Ku Klux Klan type action against the nation state of the Jewish people, I want to know that. And if I'm a client, I want to know that I'm not being represented by a bigot. So Harvard Law School, disclose the names. And if you won't, we'll find them out. And if we find them out and we can confirm them, then we'll publish them and make it clear that people have to be held accountable for their bigotry. Okay. This is an interesting one. I have not seen one gaunt face in Gaza in the news. And indeed, some logic worked for me about the children. What adults would allow their children to starve while feeding themselves? Everybody shown in the documentary in the close-up was round-cheeked. That may overstate it. There is some hunger. There are people in parts of Gaza who aren't getting three solid meals a day. But I agree with you. We don't see the pictures that we often see when there's real starvation or real famine. When I was in Israel, I did a lot of checking on this from lots of different sources and saw photographs and saw videos. And it's very clear to me that they have been claiming famine and starvation since November. They've been crying wolf, and they've been wrong then, and they're wrong now. There should be more food. Everybody should have the right to three meals a day. But, you know, when the citizens of Gaza support the murder of and rape and beheadings of Jews, a little bit of pain on the part of those who actually supported this probably is not something I would be too upset about. I obviously don't want children and babies to starve, but their parents should feed them. Their parents should, you know, withhold food from themselves. And I want to see the data. I want to see an objective study before I conclude that there's a famine. I want to see an objective study of actual nutrition in Gaza. I want to see the data, not produced by the Hamas Health Organization, which we know fakes all their data, and not by the United Nations and not by UNRWA. I'd like to see some objective. I don't know that there are objective people who report on Gaza these days, but I'd like to see objective data and make my own decision. Who are you going to believe, them or your lying eyes? So I'm skeptical, very skeptical about the claims of famine. According to a recent UN report, famine may strike in Gaza as soon as June. Now, we're talking about several months now, and that was about a month ago. And so be skeptical. Be skeptical of the numbers you hear about civilians killed. Be skeptical about famine and starvation. Just generally be skeptical. You know, when Israel makes a terrible mistake, as it did by shooting and killing aid workers, they admit it, and they have a complete evaluation and a study, and they produce all the data. Hamas doesn't do that. You know that. And yet CNN believes Hamas more than they believe Israel. CNN has become essentially a front for Hamas, particularly CNN International, but more and more CNN in the United States as well. Okay. I would love to sit in a pub and talk with Mr. Dershowitz and listen to his analysis and points of view on a slew of matters over a few beers. Thank you for letting us listen to you. Not a few beers. I'm a one beer drinker. I like a good Guinness on tap, but I've never had two of them. I like a good Lagavulin straight up before dinner, maybe two or three times a week, but not two of them. So you're not going to sit with me and have beers, but maybe a beer. Be happy to do that. But if you listen to my next letter, no, you're not going to be able to have a drink with me in a bar. Here's the next letter. Dersh really ought to relocate to the old folks' home and stay there. So I'm too old. I'm too stodgy to have a beer with you. I ought to be just walking with my cane to the old age home and playing shuffleboard. So, you know, it's good we have different points of view. No one talks about the thousands of Jewish people who had to leave their homes. There are many thousands of people from the north in uncontested areas of Israel who've had to leave their homes because of rockets from Hezbollah. And they'll be worse because, as you know, Israel recently killed a group of Iranian commanders, people who were helping support Hezbollah and Hamas and the Houthis in attacking Israel. And they did it in a military compound. Now, the Iranians claim, oh, it's a military compound. It was a consular building. Nonsense. They had turned the consular building into a military compound. Otherwise, why would you have all those military people there? Res ipsa loquitur. It speaks for itself. If you find soldiers and military people in a building, it's a military building. It's not a diplomatic building. Okay. This is a strange one. Thank you for finally admitting that Hamas uses hospital sites as military staging areas. Me admitting it? I've been asserting it from day one. My son invented the term Hamaspitals. So we have been on this issue for a long time. We've been talking and proving and establishing without any doubt that Hamas has used hospitals, schools, mosques, you name it, every institution possible, private homes, as a military bases because they're essential war strategy is to use civilians as human shields to multiply the number of civilians who die and blame it on Israel. We now have data from captured documents that Hamas deliberately lies and blames deaths caused by Hamas and Islamic Jihad rockets, blames them on Israel, blames the deaths of human shields on Israel. So again, be skeptical of claims of starvation, of famine, of statistics about how many children are dying. And remember, too, children are 19, 18, 17, 16. Hamas uses child soldiers. If somebody's coming at you with a grenade or an RPG or a automatic machine gun who's 14 years old, you got to kill him first. Rise up and kill him if he tries to kill you first, even if he's 14 or 15. But if a 14 or 15 or an 18-year-old is killed in combat, they rank him as a child. If a woman soldier is about to plant a bomb or is wearing a suicide vest and dies as a result of the suicide vest, they list her as a woman. If she's a woman or she's an 18-year-old, no, she must be a civilian. It's total nonsense. Don't believe the statistics that come out of Hamas. Just don't believe it. It's not true. Oh, my God, I wish I had been at the Joe versus Alan mom debate. Sounds adorable. It was great. I wasn't there, but I did hear the tape. In fact, I think I still have the recording. My mother was quite a great debater. You know, just a word about my mother. She graduated top of her class in high school, Eastern District High School. I think it was the same class that Red Auerbach was in, or approximately the same time. She was the first person in the history of her family to get into college. She got at the City College of New York, which was in those days a great college, September 1st of 1929. Well, of course, by the end of October, we had the Great Depression and she had to leave. And so she never was able to finish college. She went back to college for non-credit after my brother and I went off and she and my father lived alone, and she went to classes all the time, but she was brilliant. She would have been top of her class in any college or any law school. And Joe's mother was brilliant. So it was a great debate. There was a recording of it somewhere. If I can find it, maybe I'll play excerpts of it someday. This is a great quote by H.L. Mencken. If a politician found he had cannibals among his constituents, he would promise them missionaries for dinner. Yeah, I think President Biden, you ought to think seriously about that when you make promises to the Arabs and Muslim voters of Michigan. Please don't promise them missionaries for dinner. Okay, last one today. I'm voting for RFK. You stated earlier you wouldn't vote for him. Why? Love you, Professor Dersh. Don't know what we do without you. I'm coming around on RFK. I heard his interview on CNN yesterday. It was very good. And I think he's moving away from some views which many people regard as extremist. He's going to be a strong candidate. He will have an influence in this election. And I think both the Republicans and the Democrats are treating him unfairly. And you have to understand that in America, you have a right to run and be a third party candidate. So I'm not saying I'd vote for Bobby Kennedy, but I'm not saying I'd vote against him. I have a completely open mind on who I'm going to vote for in this election for the first time since I started voting in 1960. So earn my vote. See you tomorrow.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.